Major funding for the connection is provided by Macromedia, the software company helping to redefine what the web can be. Available on the web at www.macromedia.com.
I'm Jackie Leiden, in for Dick Gordon. This is The Connection. In a business world without borders, this is one of the downsides. Financial contagion. The creeping case of transcontinental risk aversion last struck in 1998 when Russia partially defaulted on its debt and panicked international investors who dumped stocks and bonds in other emerging markets. East Asia was struck the hardest at the time, but the effects were felt as far away as Brazil, where the central bank resigned and the government devalued the real. Well, the viral spiral is back. This time, Argentina's recent default threatens to take neighboring economies down with it. Last week, Uruguay, the banking capital of Latin America, imposed a four-day bank holiday to stop a run on deposits as worried Argentine investors withdrew their money. And in Brazil, political uncertainty over this fall's presidential election is contributing to worries over news that Brazil, Latin America's largest economy, is suddenly a less desirable investment prospect than Nigeria. So what's a World Bank to do? Connection listeners, should the International Monetary Fund step in to bail out yet another failing Latin American economy? Can it afford not to? 1-800-423-8255 is the number to call. That's 1-800-423-TALK. I'm joined on the line from Sao Paulo, Brazil now by Ray Collett of the Financial Times newspaper. Ray Collett, thanks for joining me.
Sure, no problem.
Help us understand how Argentina's default last December has affected its neighboring countries and economies.
Well, I think the Argentine default is one in a number of factors that have led to increased contagion, financial contagion in the region, in the sense that it heightens investor concerns and risk aversion in international capital markets. Having lost money in Argentina, obviously investors are more hesitant to put money in a country close to Argentina, which, frankly, a lot of times Latin American countries are perhaps lumped into sort of a region, Latin America, without investors exactly understanding the differences between the countries. So that's one factor.
Mm-hmm.
The second factor is, as you said in your introduction, related to the political uncertainty ahead of presidential elections in October.
In
we
Brazil.
Can see quite clearly mm-hmm. that the risk, if you look at bond prices, for example, Brazilian bond prices, as well as the currency decline, began exactly at the same time that the leading opposition candidate, Luiz Inácio Lula da Silva, of the left-wing Workers' Party, began rising in the polls. So there's a clear correlation there between risk perception and the fear of a left-wing victory in that election. And the third and final element, excuse me, is that on top of all this, obviously what has happened is near panic, or at least the sell-off on global markets, and particularly in the U.S. So in some sense, the U.S. Stock exchange, the plummet in the U.S. stock exchange has had its fallout on Brazil as well, in the sense that people that have lost money in the U.S. and in European markets are now even more hesitant to lend to countries such as Brazil. And the Brazilian companies are feeling that. There's an enormous credit crunch on Brazilian companies that are not uh-huh. able to get funding.
Uh-huh. Ray,
those are the three main okay. elements.
Let me ask you about Treasury Secretary Paul O'Neill's visit to Brazil and other countries in Latin America this week. Did he reverse the damage done by his off-the-cuff remark a week ago when he dismissed the idea of financial aid to the nation?
Well, I think he helped clarify what his position is. The Brazilian government officially was satisfied with that. His comments and his rather strong support, actually, this week for Brazil, for Brazil's economic policies, helped restore some of the investor confidence that was lost due to his previous remarks. We have yet to see that materialize into in agreement with the International Monetary Fund and more long-term support and confidence in the economy. Again, the underlying problem at this point is one that's beyond Mr. O'Neill's influence, the global risk aversion and the political scenario in Brazil.
Right, but certainly an intemperate remark about lining Swiss banks and a feeling of pessimism can become self-fulfilling prophecy. Let's move on to Uruguay, which received a $1.5 billion bridge loan from the U.S. Treasury that will eventually be picked up by the IMF. Will that be enough to avert a banking crisis there?
Well, again, whether it will be able to avert a crisis, we don't know yet. Clearly, it helps in the short term. The Uruguayan banks had faced, as happened earlier in the year in Argentina, faced a run on deposits, depleting Uruguayan the deposits in the Uruguayan banking system. So clearly, that money will help. The central bank in Uruguay, but again that is an outstanding question. I think what we're beginning to see though is a differentiation of policies on the part of the IMF and of the U.S. government that they have given support to Uruguay. It looks like they're about to lend support to Brazil as well. Whereas in the Argentine case, they are more hesitant. They're asking for more structural reform. The country needs to do more to improve its economic fundamentals. So we're beginning to see a differentiation of policy within the region, not lumping the countries together anymore.
All right. Well, Ray Collett, thank you very much for joining me.
Sure. My pleasure.
I'd like to introduce my other guest now. Jeffrey Frankel is the James W. Harpell Professor at the JFK School of Government at Harvard and a former member of President Clinton's Council of Economic Advisers, and he joins me in our studio. And Nancy Birdsall is the president of the Center for Global Development in Washington. Welcome to you both.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Nancy Birdsall, I'll start with you, if I may. 4 years ago, the Clinton administration and the International Monetary Fund put together this $41.5 billion rescue package for Brazil. And then 2 months later, its central bank resigned and the government devalued the currency and everything fell apart again. So why should we do it once more? It sounds like perhaps we're setting ourselves up to be gluttons for punishment here, doesn't it?
Well, the way I would respond to that is to take into account, I guess I would disagree somewhat with your what you included in your description, namely that things fell apart. I think the way to think about it is that was a set of steps which actually prevented Brazil from falling apart. And since that kind of rescue effort in Brazil in 1998, we've seen very good macroeconomic management in the country. We've seen a continuation in Brazil of very sensible investments, lots of social progress, infant mortality falling very rapidly as it had been during the 90s. So Brazil hasn't had the same rapid growth that one might have hoped for since 1998. But in part, that's because it suffered, because it lost, in the last year or two, it lost one of its big markets for its own exports in Argentina, and because there has been a global slowdown.
Mm-hmm. Explain how Brazil's economy affects the other Latin American currencies. It's really described as the behemoth of the region.
Well, it's the biggest economy in the region. Its size is equivalent, really, to the rest of South America. And that means, among other things, that it is a purchaser of a lot of the products that are made in other countries of the region. Perhaps for the region as a whole, well, for the United States, Brazil is important because there's a lot of foreign investment there. We still have our 401k plans probably still have some money in Brazil. So I think what Ray Collett referred to as differences in policy, I would characterize as, across the countries, I would characterize as differences in the countries which affect what is the optimal policy. And in the case of Brazil, we see more risk of more contagion, both in terms of real economic, say, trade factors within the region and investment. And we also see better policy, frankly, than in Argentina.
Okay, very good. Jeffrey Frankel, you were a member of the Clinton Economic Advisory Team when that first $41.5 billion package was made to Brazil. What was the thinking at the time, and how do you perceive its effect?
Well, just to start with, sometimes when we talk about these huge packages, $20 billion or $40 billion or whatever, the numbers are sound larger than they really are. We're rarely talking about the IMF putting it anywhere near that much money. But I agree with what Nancy Birdsall said, that it actually worked out pretty well. In 1999, they devalued, they moved to inflation targeting, the floating rate has worked pretty well for the Brazilian real, and they really have been following mostly pretty good policies, and initially, at least, it seemed to work pretty well. I have to say that leading up to that, it wasn't so obvious. When we made the loan package in the fall of 98, at the time, there was a real question, because they were trying to maintain this exchange rate target for their currency, and that strategy had ended very badly for East Asian countries and for Russia a short time before. So in some ways, it was a harder call at the time than it is in retrospect, or than hopefully the question will be presently.
Mm-hmm. Now, would both of you agree there's a thinking that if you're going to do an economic bailout, you want to do it early and you want to do it well? And the Bush administration has been absolutely philosophically opposed to doing this. Why did it change its mind, either one of you, when it comes to Uruguay?
Well, let me jump in and say, I think that, in effect, what the Bush administration has done with the example of Uruguay is to continue, frankly, to be pragmatic. It's changed the signal. It's changed its rhetoric more than it's changed its actual policy. In the case of Turkey, for example, for geostrategic reasons, the U.S. Treasury supported an IMF package a year or two ago. In the case of Argentina, a year ago, the U.S. Treasury gave the nod for an IMF effort to rescue Argentina. That, of course, did fail. So, and it's equally true that the Clinton administration was not, as some would characterize it, as always intervening. It's not true that the Clinton administration always intervened. It slowed. It did not intervene initially in Thailand. It let Ecuador go. It did not intervene in Russia. Mm-hmm. So I think we have to recognize that these differences in policy are much greater in philosophy than in actuality when it comes time to make the tough decisions.
I agree with that. I think there is something of a cycle where an administration, actually of any party, comes in, and of course they don't want to talk about bailouts, and they say we're not going to do it, or maybe just this once. But I think we've seen this cycle repeatedly. We saw it in the first Reagan administration when there was the original international debt crisis in the early 80s. And actually, I happened to be working in the White House then and watched the Reagan administration go from saying, this is all, what business is it of the public sector? The private markets should solve this for themselves. And then pretty soon, when they realized that it was going to be their fault, the Secretary of the Treasury or the Undersecretary was going to be on his watch if Argentina or Brazil or Mexico defaulted, and so they became much more interventionist. And I think we saw a bit of a cycle like that in the Clinton administration. I think the Bush administration currently is going through that cycle. They've made it a little harder than they need be, because their rhetoric has been quite variable. I think the Treasury Secretary has been very slow in learning that it's very careful. He has to be very careful in choosing his words, because the markets really listen.
All right. We'll talk more when we come back. We're talking to Jeffrey Frankel from the Kennedy School of Government and Nancy Birdsall, who is at the Center for Global Development in Washington. Connection listeners, the number to call is 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Should the IMF step in to bail out yet another failing Latin American economy? Can it afford not to? You're listening to The Connection from NPR.
From Boston University, this is WR.
I'm Jackie Lydon. This is The Connection. And we're talking in this hour about financial contagion in Latin America. The number to call to get in on the conversation is 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. My guests are Jeffrey Frankel, who's here from the Kennedy School of Government at Harvard, and Nancy Birdsall, who's president of the Center for Global Development in Washington. What does it matter if we let if we help out Brazil with a hefty multi-billion-dollar loan, eventually paid for by the IMF, but bridge loans from our own treasury? Why not let Brazil tank and suffer the consequences?
Well, of course, these loans do get repaid, but that's not a complete answer. I think there's increasing appreciation very generally that it really matters to the U.S. what goes on in the rest of the world for lots of reasons. I think our president has more of an appreciation of this than perhaps he did before he came to office. I'd say there's two reasons why he and Americans, two sets of reasons, should care what happens in Brazil, in addition to the fact that, as you said before, it is the largest economy in Latin America. The first is our short-run, narrow economic interest. It's an important export market. We have a lot of investments there. So it has an effect on our producers, our workers, our banks, everyone who has money in mutual funds, et cetera. But then there's also a longer-term issue. I think it really matters to us that Latin America and the rest of the world move, as it has, in the direction of democracy, openness, market orientation, liberalization, all the rest of that. Both Brazil and Argentina have moved over the last 20 years pretty far in that direction. Now, Argentina's got some real problems now, and the fundamentals look stronger in Brazil. Nevertheless, the point is, if even Brazil, with all it's done, can't make it economically, there are many in Latin America and elsewhere who are going to say, well, maybe this model doesn't work, the democracy, liberalization, market openness model. So I think it's very important that we have those examples of those countries succeeding.
Mm-hmm. Now, yeah, maybe I could add to mm-hmm. that or characterize that second part of Jeffrey Frankel's answer as the risk we face of what you might call ideological or philosophical contagion, which is could be related to financial contagion, but could be much more pernicious and dangerous in the long run. We want to preserve good neighbors. And in fact, Latin America has been a very good neighbor of the United States, particularly in the last decade, really representing openness and representing the deepening of democracy in a way that the U.S. cares. I'd also mention that a colleague of mine at the center has done a study suggesting that poverty is much more likely to increase much more when there is a crisis that does not get resolved well in countries like what has happened in Indonesia and what is happening now in Argentina, whereas where these crises have been resolved in part because of the willingness at the international level to make an effort to support the countries through a financial package. Mm-hmm. Poverty has also increased as a result of crises, but much, much less. And we do care as Americans about what happens to people in Brazil. As Jeffrey Frankel said, we want a bigger middle class, among other things, just in our narrow self-interest. But in addition, I think Americans, in their efforts to do foreign aid, for example, have indicated that they have some moral sense of the moral relevance.
Well, speaking of self-interest, I wonder if we're not neglecting perhaps our own hemisphere. We're considering the war on terrorism and the money that's been spent there. And then, of course, there have been horrific scenes from Argentina this summer of people fighting in the streets over food. Connection listeners, the question to consider is, should the U.S. match its military engagement with economic engagement around the world, particularly in its own hemisphere? The number to call is 1-800-423-8255, 1-800-423-TALK. What about that question, either of you? I mean, when we talk about lines of people around a bank, when Argentina's currency really collapsed over the winter, we didn't really feel that here in the United States as any particular sort of economic pain. But the news as to what's transpired ever since has been incredibly grim, and Argentina being a different set of circumstances than Brazil has not yet been considered for a bailout, or at least isn't getting one anytime soon. Do you think there's a sense that maybe the Bush administration is realizing that this is another sort of war it needs to tend to?
I think absolutely. There's a big risk already of a new wave of anti-Americanism in Latin America because of the kind of benign neglect that people perceive from the U.S., particularly in the last couple of years. And it's really especially problematic in countries like Argentina and Brazil, where there is, or there was in Argentina, a vibrant middle class and increasing competitive entrepreneurial spirit, which has just been whacked back by the chaos that's been created. So unfortunately, people do associate the reforms of the last 10 years, which really have been sensible and have put Latin America back in a situation where it could grow more rapidly. They associate those reforms with a message from Washington and an attitude about open markets that comes from the U.S. So we risk here a kind of worries about not just those economic reforms being undermined, but what happens about democratic regimes in the region because of the combination of economic and political chaos that we see when there are these crises.
All right. Let's take a question from one of our listeners. Gordon is calling from Savannah, Georgia. The number to call to get in on the discussion about Latin America and U.S. financial responsibility is 1-800-423-8255, 1-800-423-TALK. Gordon, you're calling from Savannah, Georgia. Hello.
Good morning.
What's your question?
Well, I think I'd like to say that I have spent a little bit of time in Bolivia and other countries, and it seems to me these kinds of support are critical if we're going to keep encouraging people to support capitalism and try to follow some examples we set. Don't you think that is true?
Well, I think one of the things that is being discussed in Brazil right now is that the popularity of the leading candidate there from the, I believe it's the Workers' Party candidate Lula is hostile, perhaps, or even though he says he's not, hostile to the notion of obligations, repayments to an IMF loan. Is don't we want to, his name is Luiz Inácio Lula da Silva, don't we want to support, what about Gordon's comment, Jeffrey, don't we want to support capitalism and democracy south of the border?
I think we do. I agree with him entirely. I'm waiting for those callers who will be telling us that this IMF bailouts are a waste of taxpayers' money, which is the way a lot of people feel. But I'm really pleased to hear someone like Gordon express that view. You mentioned the election, Jackie, which is probably the answer to the question, why Brazil, why now?
And that's coming up October 6th, which you might say.
Yes, it's coming up pretty soon. And certainly contagion from elsewhere, from what's happening in Argentina, is a big part of what's going on. But it is interesting that out of the crises that emerging markets have seen over the last 8 years, let's say if we go back to the Mexican crisis in 1994, it's amazing how many of them have occurred around a prospective change in government, particularly an election. And this development in Brazil looks a little like Korea looked in the fall of 1997, where you have a number of opposition candidates who may win and who have said things that indicate that maybe they will not support the kind of policies that the IMF and the international community think are necessary. And that's made investors nervous. As you mentioned, Lula is what he usually goes by, has people worried. He's run many times in the past, and usually from a pretty radical perspective. He's moderated a little bit, but that's initially what I think got investors worried. And then there's a third candidate, in addition to the government's candidate, José Serra. There's a third candidate named Ciro Gomes, who has been a sort of a wild card and whose popularity has been rising recently. And so now investors are getting nervous because of him.
Mm-hmm. Gordon, do you think that you've been in Latin America? You mentioned living there. Do you think that unless the IMF comes in and tells these countries' financiers and economists what to do left to their own devices, they might get it wrong and things might go very badly?
Well, I think that's a very fragile sort of thing. I think there's a lot of resentment for the heavy hand that the United States plays in less developed countries. And so I think we have to be supportive and still respect the judgment of the leadership of the country and of the monetary system.
All right. Thank you. Let's go to Brian, who's calling from Pittsboro, North Carolina.
Hello.
Hi, Brian. You're on the connection.
Thank you for having me on your great show. My question is this. It seems that every time you talk about such an event as bailing out a foreign country, you discuss only United States self-interest. Isn't it not in our self-interest to be virtuous and to show the world what sort of dignity the country has by practicing such old-fashioned virtues as generosity and kindness? Why aren't they sufficient reasons for bailing Brazil out and the others.
Well, does that come up? You've been an economic advisor at the White House. You mentioned that earlier you had advised the Reagan administration, I believe, at one time. And, Nancy, you're in Washington. I mean, does that even come up, the moral dimension, in these kinds of discussions as to what a U.S. administration should do? I mean, certainly some of the scenes and things we've heard about in terms of the pain these things cause, people having no life savings left, people selling everything they have, people, very poor people beginning to starve. Is that on the table?
Well, I think it's interesting that politically that has been on the table, not particularly with respect to Latin America, but certainly in the last year, the Bush administration, in part because of the shock of September 11th, has announced that it wants to increase the foreign aid budget, and it wants to target the foreign aid budget to countries that have big problems of poverty. The irony is that we have a kind of incoherence. We have, on the one hand, our foreign aid program. Then we have, on the other hand, a trade policy regime, which in many respects is hurting people in countries like Brazil, Argentina, and elsewhere in the developing world, because we are subsidizing our own agriculture, which crowds out their agriculture, because we continue to protect our textile market, and textiles are, of course, a product that developing countries could specialize in more, and in particular where the unskilled and the poor in developing countries can get a leg up on moving up the economic ladder. So what I think is it's true what Brian says, that we do reflect in part in our foreign aid policy a sense that, and a reality that, Americans are prepared to be generous. But at the same time, in the overall package of policies, we often have a sort of incoherence that adds up to policies that are not particularly helpful.
Yeah, I'm going to translate that a little bit, if you don't mind, as a no, not very much. The moral dimension is not considered very much. Jeffrey?
Well, I think if you're talking about policy to Africa or whatever, the moral dimension is there. But and I agree with Brian that we, United States, could afford to be a lot more generous on foreign aid and in other respects. It's really scandalous that as a share of GDP, we are close to the bottom of the ranking among rich countries, which I think most Americans don't realize. But, I mean, not everyone feels the way Brian feels or the way I feel, and it is a bit of a tough sell. And I think it's important to emphasize that for Latin America, we're not mainly talking about foreign aid. The IMF money does get repaid, and I have no desire to make the sell tougher than it needs to be. You can sell this even to someone who disapproves of foreign aid. You can sell the IMF rescue packages.
Okay. Yeah, I think the other thing that it's worth recognizing is that in the past, there have been problems when there's a big rescue that doesn't work.
All right. Well, let's come back to that in just a moment and let our callers get on this. We're
okay,
talking
sorry.
About the financial contagion in Latin America and the U.S. responsibility. Thanks very much, Brian.
Thank you.
The connection number to call is 1-800-423-8255, and let's go to Susanna, who's calling from Boston, Massachusetts. Hello, Susanna.
Yes, hi. How are you? Thanks for mentioning this problem we have in Brazil. And the only problem that we Brazilians are concerned is...
You are Brazilian, we should say. You're
Brazilian? Yeah, I'm Brazilian. Uh-huh. And as Brazilian, I'm not left-wing party, but Lula, he grew in so much in Brazil right now, and, you know, the only problem that we are concerned is if Lula wins, United States is going to take off all the investments from Brazil.
And he's way out in front, we should say, right?
Yes, he's way out in front, mm-hmm. and all Brazil...
Why do you think he's so much out in front?
Because he's a lot of Brazilians, it's just tired and sick to be playing these games that, you know, the American investments go there, do the investment, and we Brazilians don't see any investments in Brazil at all. Mm-hmm. We don't see all the market, it's not good at all. I don't know. And then we kind of stick to be with Cardoso. I don't know what Cardoso is doing right now in Brazil. He just plays some games with the American investment. He's not doing anything for Brazil at all.
Okay, you're talking about Fernando Cardoso, the current president. Let me go to Jeffrey here, because I want to ask you, we're talking about bailouts as helping to to promote capitalism, to promote democracy, to stabilize things so those things can flourish. Are we going to turn around and punish Brazil if a left-wing candidate is elected, Jeffrey Hill?
Well, I don't think the U.S. Government or the IMF will explicitly or deliberately punish Brazil. But if one of the opposition candidates is elected, and if he doesn't move some distance to support the good policies that Brazil has been following, and they may very well, that is a common pattern. But if they don't, then it's individual investors who are going to pull their money out, and including Brazilian investors, but also American investors and investors all around the world that will pull their money out. And then the question is, will the international community, the G7, the U.S. and the IMF come to the rescue? Well, they won't if they think that the cause of that is excessively expansionary fiscal policy, these big budget deficits, and if they think that the money will just be wasted.
For either of you, do you think there was a lesson in the Venezuela experience?
Oh, I think this, I would say the situation is different in Brazil in the sense that were Lula or Ciro Gomes, the leftist candidates, to be elected, my sense is that they would be much more cautious and conservative and responsible than even their rhetoric of the last of the past had, than their rhetoric of the past suggested. Lula, in particular, has already indicated that he would follow more or less. He would honor the debt obligations of Brazil, but the problem, frankly, boils down to one of the current crisis of confidence that people aren't sure of that. They can't have the same certainty. And that's really the nature of a developing country or an emerging market. But it is a reason why some aggressive, helpful intervention, some signal from the U.S., from the IMF, that if these candidates were to follow sensible policies, they would be supported, could make a difference now in investors' attitudes.
Okay. Thank you very much. This is Anna from Calling, and to you, Nancy. We'll be back in a moment. We're talking about financial contagion in Latin America and what the U.S. obligation to stabilize things to our neighbors to the south might possibly be. The number to call is 1-800-423-8255 when we come back, and you're listening to The Connection from NPR.
Funding for The Connection is made possible by Macromedia, the software company helping to redefine what the web can be. Available on the web at www.macromedia.com.
From Boston.
I'm Jackie Lydon, sitting in for Dick Gordon. This is The Connection from NPR, and we're talking in this hour about financial contagion in Latin America and what U.S. responsibility should be. My guests this hour are Jeffrey Frankel from the Kennedy School of Government at Harvard and Nancy Birdsall, who's president of the Center for Global Development in Washington. This week, Treasury Secretary Paul O'Neill is in Latin America trying to perhaps undo some unfortunate remarks made last week, I believe, that only complicated matters further, alluding to irresponsibility by financial leaders and political leaders there. Do you think, Nancy Birdsall, that Paul O'Neill's visit matters? Is he going to be able to stabilize things somewhat in this visit?
Well, I think it's helped a little bit. Certainly the clarification, the clarifications that he made because of the trip and during the trip, saying that Brazil has been a responsible government, that there is not a lot of corruption, that there have been good policies, and the fact that there will be this bridge loan or is this bridge loan to Uruguay are very important. On the other hand, I think much more is needed in terms of leadership from the U.S. Why? Because Brazil in particular is in a situation where it's possible that things will go very badly, but it's also possible that things could go well. Mm-hmm. And one or the other outcome, either one can happen. And what is really needed is a strong signal from somewhere to the markets that there that things can go well, to reduce the sense of panic. And it is the old story, like a bank run in the U.S., that if everyone, if all the investors believe that the other investors want to get out of Brazil, even if he or she, one of them, sees the logic of staying in Brazil, rolling over their credits to private investors in Brazil. If they're afraid that all the others are going to panic, then they feel the need to panic as well.
I feel like I just heard that argument last week about the U.S. stock market.
It's very similar. So signals from the U.S. Treasury can make a difference. In a crisis of confidence, signals matter a lot.
Okay, let's take another call. The number to call to get in on this discussion is 1-800-423-TALK. Ian is calling from Davenport, Iowa. Hello, Ian.
Yes, good afternoon or good morning, I'm sorry. I just want to inject a bit of cynicism into this whole thing, in that I understand that both Citicorp and J.P. Morgan are heavily obligated in that region, and aren't these, in essence, boomerang loans, I think is the term employed in the trade, where in essence the money goes down and then it's just used to prevent the defaulting of the debt to these large multinational U.S. corporations.
Okay, thanks, Ian. Boomerang loans, Jeffrey Frankel?
Well, I don't know about that, but it is...
What is one?
It sounds like Ian is means a process whereby large U.S. banks, let's say, have money there, they want to pull out, and so if the IMF or the U.S. government were to lend money to Brazil, it would just be used to repay the loans. And that is something one wants to prevent, and usually I think the IMF and the U.S. and the G7 have been pretty good at trying to minimize that situation. Typically what happens in one of these packages is there's three parts. The country agrees on necessary adjustment policies in terms of fiscal policy and monetary policy and the currency and all that. That's number one. Number two, the IMF puts in its money. But number three, we try to get the private sector involved, putting in more money or at least not pulling their money out. It's now called private sector involvement. But it particularly means that the U.S. banks have to leave their money in and can't pull it out at the time of the crisis.
Yeah, I think one of the things that's interesting to understand is that if the package works, in the end, a lot of the money that could be made available is not always tapped. In other words, the public money from the IMF and from the U.S. Treasury sometimes is sufficient to convince people, including in the private sector, that they don't need to panic and get out. So it's a little bit like... in the case of a bank run, if people know that there's money in the bank, they don't have to go and take their money out.
That's right. It's all about confidence.
Let's just, we'll go to another call in a moment, but just would someone briefly describe why Brazil is different from Argentina, how these economic crises are different?
Maybe I could jump in. I'm sure Jeffrey will add, but I think there's some very important differences. One is that Brazil has had a much more responsible fiscal policy, particularly in the last 4 or 5 years. If you abstract from its debt obligations, it has actually run a substantial surplus. That is, it has spent less than it has taken in taxes. Second, in Argentina, a lot of the irresponsibility prior to the crisis was due to the provincial government's overspending and a lot of clientelism and political patronage, bureaucratic overkill at the provincial level. In Brazil, about 3 or 4, 5, 6 years ago, the central government began a process of making deals with the states, which had also been fiscally irresponsible, and got on top of that problem. So in Brazil, it's now much more the way it is in the United States, where the individual states are really not allowed to run big deficits.
Okay, let's get another listener in on here since time is moving on. John is calling from Milwaukee. The number to call to get in on this conversation is 1-800-423-8255. Hello, John.
Yeah, thanks for taking my call. I guess the basic question that I have is the issues of corruption and greed. I mean, we all know about Enron and Global Crossing and how our accountants couldn't keep keep that on the straight and narrow. And I worry that in countries like Brazil and Argentina, there's no way we're going to be able to control that, and we'll be just throwing money away.
Seems a reasonable fear given our massive problems here at home. Jeffrey Frankel, what do you say?
I think it's actually a positive development that in the 90s we started to talk more explicitly about corruption. It used to be before that, that when the IMF had a program with a country, that it was too considered too delicate to even talk about it, let alone impose some tough conditions. And we did move that direction in East Asia. I think that's not the main problem with Brazil now. And one of the reasons why, or the reason why O'Neill got into trouble with the comments that he made a week or two ago that you alluded to, Jackie, is that the key phrase, the money will go into Swiss bank accounts. And I actually have a feeling he probably wasn't thinking about corruption. He was just being sloppy in his choice of words. But in the region, that's the way it was interpreted.
Yeah, I think here's another difference between Brazil and Argentina. Probably there's, and certainly Uruguay. Uruguay and Brazil have much less of a problem of political corruption than Argentina has had.
Okay.
I just want to mention probably the biggest difference between Argentina and Brazil is that Argentina had a very rigid peg to its exchange rate when it went into crisis, what's called a currency board. And Brazil has been at the opposite extreme, a more or less purely floating exchange rate. So they've been in the opposite corners among all the different kinds of exchange rate arrangements that countries could choose.
Okay, let's take another call. The number to call here at The Connection is 1-800-423-8255, 1-800-423-TALK. I'm going to Martha. Hello, you're calling from Irmo, South Carolina.
Correct. While I was making my call, the previous caller, in a way, expressed my ideas, because when we look around at all of the countries that we've aided and how many of them now are so anti-American, perhaps not the regimes, but the people of the country, how do we balance what we give away and looking after people who've lost their life savings because of our greedy CEOs within our own country? How do we find a balance for this? I'm very concerned also.
Okay, thank you, Martha. A good question, I think. I don't know that anti-American sentiment is exactly what we're talking about, but you mentioned earlier, Jeffrey, the heavy hand of American fiscal policy in these places, and I think Martha's saying, look, we have people here at home who've lost their pensions because of things like the Enron collapse. How do you balance that with helping out Brazil or Uruguay?
Well, it's probably worth recalling again that U.S. foreign aid is very small, much smaller than people think it is by the standards of other countries, for example. And most of that goes to a few key geopolitical allies, Israel and Egypt and Turkey. And then most of the rest goes to Africa, where I think we want it to go, or other very poor countries. So it's actually not relevant to our discussions of Brazil, which is, after all, in Argentina. These are middle-income countries.
And you mentioned, I think, earlier that these are loans which are repaid. So although $40 billion sounds like a lot of money.
The IMF loan, we may have one by the end of the week. They're negotiating hard on a package with the IMF right now. It's not going to be $40 billion of IMF money that they're talking about, and they don't need that much. It's going to be something much smaller. Number two, it's going to be repaid. Number three, there's pretty tough conditions attached. It's not just giving money away.
Mm-hmm. I think also with Martha's question, she's right that there has to be struck a balance. But basically, in the past, it's been worked out better than maybe her question suggested. Look at Mexico. I think the rescue in Mexico has been a good thing for the U.S. and a good thing for Mexicans.
All right. Martha, does that answer your questions?
I think I can leave it with that.
Thank you. Thank you very much for calling. Let's see if we can... maybe wrap this up. Do you think that this administration has been on a learning curve about how to act, both as a, certainly it's one thing to talk about politics and terrorism, and perhaps a softer and more complicated thing to talk about economic responsibility in this hemisphere? We're seeing a big reversal on Sunday with the announcement, I think it was Sunday, of the support of the bailout to Uruguay.
Well, the bridge loan to Uruguay, yeah.
Bridge loan, yeah. I guess I shouldn't call it 1-800-BAILOUT, huh?
I think a learning curve is a good word for it. Maybe every administration goes through it in some respect. And it's been a little tougher on the Bush administration in that it suggested more of a change in its rhetoric from the campaign than was the case with earlier administrations. But definitely a learning curve both on foreign aid and on the need to do some, the need to provide some help to countries that are middle income and get into these financial troubles if those countries have responsible policies.
I think they've learned a lot. And one of the things they've learned, I think they came in with this handicap of being under the illusion that this was easy. That telling countries they couldn't have bailouts was easy, or that limiting the size of even the U.S. government was easy. And it's not. It's hard. It takes a lot of hard work, and you have to be very careful what you do and what you say.
Secretary of Treasury O'Neill will be leaving this week. What else do you expect to see? This might be a big week for looking at Latin American financial problems. Will there be any announcements, you think, in the wake of his departure?
I think the most important thing to wait for is not actually an announcement, but much more quiet behind-the-scenes work. For example, the Treasury could be working with our banks here to encourage them not to panic, to keep their credit lines open. It could be, on the political side, working more closely with the opposition candidates in Brazil, not the Treasury, but maybe the State Department, in order to encourage those opposition candidates to be even more clear about what their policies would be were they elected, and that would increase confidence. I think those kinds of actions behind the scenes, which the market actors would know about and would be comforted by, really would be the best next step.
On O'Neill, I assume you're referring to his trip over the last few days through Brazil,
yes.
Uruguay, and Argentina, which I think has been successful, and he stuck to his script, and I think he's done a good job of restoring confidence, and I think he's reversed whatever damage he did from that by that earlier comment. There's heavy negotiations going on with the IMF now. Ideally, the opposition candidates would agree to support the government programs, and then the IMF could proceed. I think that's probably not going to happen, and I'm hopeful that maybe by the end of the week we'll see some kind of IMF program where the money is backloaded, where it's much of it is not dispersed until the election or after the election to make it contingent on what the new president, whoever he is, does and says. And hopefully that'll be enough to restore confidence. They said they have a fair amount of reserves, and if confidence just doesn't deteriorate further, they can probably last until after the election.
All right. Well, thank you both very much.
Thank you, Jackie.
Thank you.
My guests this morning have been Nancy Birdsall. She's president of the Center for Global Development in Washington, D.C. Jeffrey Frankel is the James W. Harpel Professor of Capital Formation and Growth at the JFK School of Government. And earlier this hour, we spoke with Ray Collett. He's the Sao Paulo Bureau Chief for the Financial Times newspaper. You can continue this conversation online at our website, theconnection.org. The Connection is produced by Sean Carberry, Lisa Chow, Sarah Field, Kelly Jones, Allison McAdam, Lindsay Miller, Tara Murphy, Christina Russo, and Doug Shugarts. Our interns are Cara Arsenault, Clint Kavanaugh, and Orit Karitsky-Fox. Graham Smith is our senior producer, and I'm Jackie Lydon, in for Dick Gordon, and this is The Connection from NPR.
Funding for The Connection is made possible by Macromedia, the software company helping to redefine what the web can be.
This is